Welcome to the Zeno podcast, where we talk about how stories shape us and how we shape stories. Today we have Crystal Densley on the podcast.
She is the professor of theater at BYU Hawaii. Before teaching at BYU, she taught at Penn State and IU, where she got her master's of fine arts. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
So, really important question.
Yeah.
Is it theater, E-R, or theater, R-E, at the end?
That is the important question. As English people, I'm sure you really want to know.
We do.
It really depends. So, if you're going to the theater to see a play, it's R-E.
The building.
The building.
Mm-hmm. The going to see a performance in a theater is R-E. And so the only time it ever bothers me, like sometimes I'm surprised, and I'll see movie theater and sometimes they do R-E and sometimes they do E-R. I think it's supposed to be E-R. But I always am curious when I see R-E. I'm like, ooh, what are they doing? Yeah, I'm not really sure. You know, the English language has got all kinds of things in it that make a lot of sense. You know, like there. All there. Theirs.
There's.
I feel so bad there. For all of our foreign students who have to learn this language. But yeah, so that's all I know about that. Okay. I haven't done a lot of research. I just do it.
We just were writing it. Like in your bio, we're like, is it ER? RE? Is this going to make us look bad? Because we don't know what we're talking about.
But theater. Okay. So, but the idea of theater, like when people say, I'm into theater, that's ER? Theater?
Mm-mm.
That's
RE.
All theater.
All theater mm-hmm. is RE.
RE. So the Department of Theater will be RE.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even though it's not the place where you go see it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The art itself is RE.
And then when would you use ER?
At the movies.
At the movies.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The movie theater. Now you hear it here.
You heard it here first, folks. Figured it out.
Squash that confusion forever.
Well, we're just here to, like, kind of pick your brain about all your productions. You've been directing for over 10 years now. What's your favorite production? Or do you have one? If you don't, that's okay. But
I don't have one, but I can tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Is that every time I learn something different.
Yeah.
And every time I do a production, I'm implementing technique in some way that I haven't done before.
Hmm.
And so that's exciting for me. I have some favorite moments from each production and... I don't know, theater is magical in a way that film can never be, which again, it's magical in a way that theater can't ever be. But with the theater, we spend all this time, we work very hard in a short amount of time to put something together, and connection happens with the actors and with the production crew as in general. And then you put it on its feet and you bring an audience, because it's not theater, R-E, unless you have an audience. And then it kind of just disappears into the atmosphere for forever, because it happens and we do our run and we're super busy, and then we close the very last show and the set comes down and the costumes go away and you leave, and yet you've done something wonderful, but it will never ever happen again. And even if you record it, you're only recording one moment of it. And the camera, with how they record it, I mean, if you shoot it like a film, then you're missing something. And if you shoot it wide, then you can't see the detail. So it really is an art form that's unlike anything else, because a painting exists forever. Or you can record a piece of music and it will always sound the same when you play it back, right?
Right.
But so that's why I don't really have a favorite, is because every time I have a favorite moment or something magical happens. And that's why I keep doing it, is for even those little moments. And sometimes it's just an actor understands something that they've never understood before. They get where their character is coming from, or they sing a song that you just are like slow clapping for days. But that's special. And that's why I keep coming back. But sorry, guys, no favorites.
That's okay.
No, yeah.
No, just want to know.
Do you, are there any really good moments where people had to improv, or like something went wrong and they just corrected really well in the middle of a scene and they just made it happen?
Well, I mean, the goal of rehearsal is for that not to happen, right? I mean, outtakes like you have in film are what you're not going for,
right?
And sometimes I've heard from my actors, that things happen backstage that they didn't know. Like, they have to bring on a prop and it's not on the table and they have to figure it out, but the prop is crucial to the scene.
Yeah.
And they don't know where it is and they have to either make something up or they have to figure out how they're going to say the line so that the thing that's not there
that's impressive.
Will still make sense. And that comes from just experience, the ability to cover like that. I mean, I've had experiences as an actor where I just completely forgot to go on for a scene. Like, I finished a scene and I went off stage. I was like, sweet, I get to go change costumes. I don't come on for a while. And I was supposed to come right back on, but I wasn't there. So
they covered for you.
Well, they just didn't do the scene. Like, I had one person who I was supposed to come out and have a scene with her. Mm-hmm. And so she turned around for me to come on stage and I wasn't there. And she just kept turning and went on to the next thing. And I was
like, all right.
You know, bravo. But
she came back and was like, hey,
No, I was halfway undressed. So I had a period costume on. So I had a corset and all kinds of pieces. And I couldn't get it back on fast enough to make it back on stage. And I realized halfway through changing costumes that I was toast. I felt so bad. I still am, like, racked with guilt over it because I'm such a perfectionist that it was awful. But since I've been here, no crazy stories. And again, that's why we rehearse, right? We do it again and again and again so that your body remembers how to do everything and your mind is totally focused in the moment. And I've never had a light fall on someone, or which is really good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Weird costume things. I wish I had better anecdotes about that. Everyone wants to know all the things that go wrong.
Yeah, the drama.
Yeah, but it's not really drama-filled. And I'm like the least dramatic person. Well, I don't know that everyone would agree. Like, maybe my spouse wouldn't agree, but but I, I just have to stay away. I kind of like prefer to be, you know, alone in my office and doing my thing, and I don't attract the drama.
Okay,
man. But you are into
but
drama.
But not the cliche. I am.
To the,
I am
the
into
art
drama.
Of drama. But
the
not
art of
drama.
The art of drama.
Petty drama.
Yeah.
Not the Real Housewives of La'ie drama.
No, but that would be cool. I direct that.
Everybody's just
if someone wrote it.
Nice to each other. It's like really positive and uplifting.
And
it's
someone confronts passive. Someone else and they just are passive aggressive. You know?
It's like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I'll take care of that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Exactly.
So happy music plays at the end.
Yeah.
So your experience has been with writing and acting and directing, correct?
It's more, I'm really an actor first. That's what I've done the most. That's what I trained to do. So my MFA, which is, you mentioned it's a Master of Fine Arts, but it's a terminal degree. So there's no other degree I can get in my field. And it's very rigorous and kind of sucks you dry. I mean, you just work and work and work at this craft. And I don't even know what else I was going to say about it. It was brilliant, I'm sure. Ask the question one more time, then it will jog my memory.
Like, what's the difference between acting and
directing and all that?
Directing.
Well, it's all part of the same thing,
yeah.
Right? I've written a little, and I'm teaching playwriting right now, which has really, really been wonderful. But like I said, I am an actor first and foremost. That's what I'm trained. And directing is actually, if you have the eye for it, is a great offshoot of acting because you can communicate better with the people on stage if you know how they think and how they speak. So sometimes I find myself doing bad director things like be quieter rather than actually giving them an internal motivation. But sometimes you have to do that when you have to get through things. But there isn't one that I prefer. I mean, I don't ever want to leave one forever, you know. Sometimes I worry when I'm directing all the time that I'm losing some of my technique as an actor, but there'll be opportunities. I'll make opportunities for myself. That's a great thing about this too, is you know from being in playwriting, you know, if you want something great, you can write it for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't need to wait for anyone else. And that didn't used to be the case. It used to be very by the book, theater did. You know, you only do plays that were written by people who are dead or, you know, by these Pulitzer Prize winning playwrights. And now with the invention of the cell phone and the video, everyone's doing audio. But people have vlogs and they're filming their own short things and putting them on the internet, and they're just getting view after view after view after view. And so the age of film is changing. And because of that, it's influencing theater, even though theater tries really hard to not go there. Like, they still want to be pure in a lot of ways. But they're finding that their audiences don't want that. Their audiences are changing, and they have to change with it. And so we have projections in this show. It's mm-hmm. not all about your imaginations. It's about showing you what's happening. And
so could you be a little bit more clear about what you mean by how, like, film is influencing theater, especially with the projections, because it's kind of a visual thing.
Film is the medium, right? Mm-hmm. It's what everybody goes to see. If you poll a college student, ask them how many movies they've seen this year, they might not even be able to count how many movies they've seen just since January. And you ask them how many pieces of theater they've gone to see. Most likely nothing. Yeah. Most likely. Because we're on an island and there's not a lot to see here. So already it used to be the opposite way around. Film used to be something that was stealing from theater. Mm. They're going, these great actresses, these great actors, I'm going to steal them from Broadway and put them in my movie because then I'm going to have the quality I'm looking for. And it's not the same anymore. Like I was mentioning, you can take your phone and write a monologue and film yourself and put it on the internet and have all your friends share it and, you know, make some hefty residuals from YouTube.
Yeah.
Or be seen by somebody who then calls you and says, I want to use you for this. I want to put you in this. It's the game has changed. And so there are several productions on Broadway Broadway's always been about spectacle, right? But mm-hmm. as for theater, we always look to that to see what the trend is. And now, the trend is Hamilton, right? Yeah. It's writing something new, not something old that we're going to revive. Let's bring back that same thing we've done 40 times. Mm-hmm. People are not interested in that. People still are paying, you know, $2,000 minimum a seat to see Hamilton. And yet it's a story about a founding father from forever ago. And yet we're fascinated with the merging of the old and the new. And that set is very simple. And it has movement and, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of where the trend is going. And but it's influenced by popular music. All art is interconnected. So popular music influenced Lin-Manuel Miranda, who then wrote this show. And he cast people of color, of all colors, mm-hmm. because he's showing that theater is for everybody. And he requires, like, if the rights ever get available for that, which will be in 100 years, that's a requirement of casting. And so the trends in theater are reflecting the trends in film and the trends in music and the trends in art. But theater can't deny those other trends or it will die. Mm. I sure hope it doesn't. I don't know. There'll always be like Shakespeare and things that will live on. But even that, Shakespeare in the Park in New York, which again, New York theater is kind of where we get our estimates as to what's happening. And that's always multicultural. They do it outside, which is one of my favorite kinds of theater.
That's really cool.
And but things like projections are because our audience, they're visual. So even when I'm directing this production now, some moments I'd love to take more time with, but I know as a director, if I don't keep that pace moving forward, then I'm going to lose my audience because they're used to the action flick that there's no downtime. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I watched a brilliant movie the other day that Kenneth Branagh directed that's based on Agatha Christie book, and it moves along, but it's still like each character gets their moment, and because he's a theater director mm-hmm. and a film director, and so he merges those things, and yet that movie didn't have critical acclaim like Mission Impossible 12 or whatever. People don't pay as much money to see that. I don't know if it has to do with being wanting to be distracted or what. I don't know. I tell my students all the time, like, when you go to the theater, you have a responsibility. It's not this, when you go to a movie, you sit in front of the screen and you watch it, and you could be eating popcorn. I've been in movies where people are on their phones the whole time, And they paid for that experience to be on their phone and watching that. When you come to the theater, your phone has to go away. And you see a human in front of you. You don't see a screen. It's a person. And you, whether you like it or not, you connect with them on some way. And when you go home, you have to think about what you saw. You have to think about how it affects your morality. And you don't have to think about that when you go to films. I mean, I hope that people do in some way. But it's different. And I love that it's different. And I hope it always stays a little bit different. But we're reflecting the trends, like projection.
So projection, will you explain that? And also Solana, your new
Talk about projection. Solana. Okay, so projections are using high-powered projectors. They're placed, I mean, it's no different than watching a film. I mean, a projector projects it onto the screen. In this production, we're using, I believe, four projectors. And there's a computer program. So we have one computer that operates it all. So it can make the screens act as one, or it can make them act as separate screens. So each projector is then positioned on stage and it doesn't move. And then again, they feed to whichever projector the image they want, or they coordinate the images with this program.
Okay.
So do you have more questions about like the projection specifically?
Like, or how do you... It's so technical. Like,
yeah.
I guess just how does it work? Like, is it super clear? Is it on the back of the wall, or is it like
this
you're projecting?
This will be projected on set pieces. Like, for example, there's one part in this show where there's a waterfall.
Okay.
And so
like moving stuff. Like,
yeah, you can do moving things. You can do still images. We're using the projections to tell the story because there's part of the story that happens in the real world. And I don't want to give anything away, but there's also part of the story that doesn't take place in what we would consider the real world. And the projections are going to be slightly askew when we're in that other world. So people might not exactly know what's going on, but later they're going to look back at the moment and go, oh, that's why this looked like this.
That's really cool.
Because it's helping inform my experience. But in terms of like how it all works, do not ask me. Other than, you know, how you can, I mean, a film is still frames. When I when I was in college, I worked in movie theater and I put together movies. And sometimes I would burn movies. That happens sometimes. But it's all individual little frames. And now everything is digitized, so you don't have to worry about that anymore. But I think that the idea is similar. And then someone's going to listen to this and be like, you're fired. But I know that we're doing both animated and still images.
Okay, cool.
But I haven't seen them yet. So I have no idea how they're going to look. I really hope that they're magnificent.
I'm excited to see
them. As they are in my mind. But my mind isn't always
great. Was there a manual precursor to the projections? Like, what is this replacing? Or what is it just an add-on to set design? Or how does that change?
Well, the set is still designed with levels and panels, but the projection is so the set itself is going to look like a whitewashed barn, side of a barn. So you'll see slats, right? It'll look like a barn, but it'll be basically white, so it's like a blank canvas. So then the color, all the color from the set will come from the projections. So that at some points, like at the beginning, there won't be any color. It'll be just white, and you'll kind of get this bland world that we begin in, and then slowly color comes in. And
that's fun.
Yeah, but it's not it. I know that there are some productions that have a fairly blank stage, and they use projection to be the set. But that's not this. And plus, I don't know how to do that. The only reason why we're doing projections is because we have people coming from Utah State that know what they're doing.
Oh, sweet.
And I'm hoping that in the future, because they're teaching us and things like that, I hope that we can continue using that because, like I said, it knowing that there's going to be projection and things, I think will entice our audience to come see something in a way that they haven't before.
Has this hit Broadway?
Has this one? No.
It has projections.
Like, oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's now, this is part of the standard. So you're saying that's how film has kind of come into the regular of theater?
That's why they put it in there, right? Is because they knew that images like that would affect the audience. There's a play that's been on Broadway, A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night. It's about a man. It was a book.
Okay, yeah, I've seen the book.
It's a play about an autistic man, and it's they use projection in mm-hmm. all of it. I haven't seen it. I would love to see it. My husband saw it, but that's if you don't have the projection, it's like the set designer and the lighting designer's way of helping us into the mind of the character by showing us images that they can't show with just like constructed pieces. And it shifts constantly, and the light, and I think you can even just Google mm-hmm. images of it, and it's pretty wow. fantastic. But yeah.
So when you were, because Solana is a devised mm-hmm. work, right? And you were working right kind now. Of, yeah, with the playwrights. Mm-hmm. Did you guys decide together that it was going to be projected, or did uh-huh. they?
So this is part of the fun of a collaborative process.
Yeah.
So this production has been workshopped in pieces in different locations. It started at IU. I saw the very first workshop ever done. It was just Act One. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very new, very rough. Then the next year they came back and they did Act Two. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see kind of how it was going to intermingle. But that is not the show that we see today. Mm-hmm. So it really started somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they've done a reading of it in New York where they, you know, actors just sit on stools and they stand up when they sing, and just so they could hear it and see what it sounded like, because mm-hmm. It's not one of those arts that you read. It's one of those arts that's performed. And then not too long ago, they did a 48-hour run at Tuacon in wow. South Utah, where they sent the music, they flew out, they worked with the actors, then they did a staged reading like that. So that was the last thing that's cool. been done. It's never had costumes, it's never had set and light and all of that. It's never been fully realized. And that was something that I was interested in doing here. So we knew every big musical we do, I guess for the last 16 years, we've used the same designer from Utah State. And so I knew that Bruce would be a part of this program and this specific production. And he was so excited about it because they don't often get to do new works like this there either. Right. This is really rare at any university. And so he got grant money from his dean to have two graduate students. So they're getting their MFAs, but they're in scene design, a second year and a third year. And they, along with Bruce, worked to design this set. So they're the ones that brought projection to the table because they're so well-versed in it.
Yeah.
Okay. And They sent us these images of design, and then we all agreed on it. And Michael and Eileen, who are our composers and, mm-hmm. and playwrights, they sat in on the meeting and they got to see the designs and they thought, wow, this is going to be great. And so we gave them the go ahead and they wow. sent us the information and we built the set while they were gone. And now they're wow. here and they're finishing it up. So it's collaborative. Like I didn't say I want projection.
Right.
They said, let's do projection.
Yeah. Like,
it'll be cool.
They got all excited.
Like, sure. So now we're married to projection. So I'm really excited. I hope it.
Yeah.
I hope it's going to be great.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
How's your relationship with the musical, like as a director, right?
Yeah.
So you have this new musical and then you've done other musicals.
Yeah.
You've done Into the Woods, Romeo and Juliet. Those are very, I don't know, classic musicals.
Yeah.
Or plays, how is it different doing this new play? Like, how's your relationship with the play as a director?
It's very difficult because if you have a standard thing, especially like Shakespeare, right? We're dealing with a 400-year-old play that is kind of tried and tested.
Yes.
Everyone knows it works, and I can read through it, and I can go, you know, we could cut out a few things and still have a solid story that the audience is going to get. So I approach it very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the text is so strong that all I have to do is put people on stage and tell them where to move and have a concept that works with the text, and boom, we've got a great show. It's almost like foolproof.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of trust and trial and error and hard work. I mean, when Michael and Eileen came, we had 4 weeks to workshop this with them, knowing that it was not complete, that it would change, and the excitement was that we would have a production to put up at the end. But even as we're going through it, it's overwhelming because they left after 4 weeks. That left us 2 weeks to block a whole production, a whole musical, a full-length musical.
Yeah.
Normally, we take, in the academic world, we take 6 or 7 weeks to block a production. And we just haven't had that. And also, I'm dealing with a lot of actors who have either never been a production before at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fist bump to you. And
Jackson's in it.
Or they're just really inexperienced. They've only done it once or twice, or they've sung before and never acted, or they've acted and never sung. I'm dealing with all kinds of students in many different levels of ability.
Yeah, I cannot believe that. And, like, that's just incredible to me. It's an incredible amount of
and
work.
And yet they're so excited that they came and they auditioned for this experience, knowing that this is going to be hard, and it's okay if we fail miserably, but we're going to give it a shot, right? And that's something I try to teach my students too. I mean, in art, you can't be afraid to win big and to fail big. And right now we're winning big, and let's hope it continues. But maybe we'll have one show that fails big, and that's cool too, because we'll learn something from it. Mm-hmm. But the difference is it's just so fast and strenuous. I mean, every night it's like a marathon, and then we have to get up and go and teach and go to school the next day and do it again the next night. And we open next week, and we're not stressed at all. I mean, we ran through it for the first time yesterday. For the very first time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's, but it's also exciting because I think this is really good for me because I'm learning to let go, because I do like to polish everything. Mm-hmm. I like it to be a shiny penny when I open the doors.
Yeah.
And this will be a different kind of experience because it will be finished and it will make sense as best as we can with the script as it is now. But I have to keep reminding myself that this isn't about presenting a perfect shiny penny. This is about presenting something that's brand new, having the audience and the actors be a part of the process so that, like, the audience responses that we get, I'm mailing to Michael and Eileen.
Yeah.
And they'll have it all, and they'll adjust the script yet again. And the next evolution already includes stuff that they wrote here that only BYU Hawaii students were a part of.
Wow.
Which I think is so cool. And then it'll change again. And then the next place it goes will be new and different. But the thing that it has going for it is incredible music. Their skills with composition are just... The music is amazing. Mm-hmm. And a story that's on the right track. And with our actors and with the audience, we can help fill in the gaps. But I also think it's kind of cool. I mean, how often do we get to see something that isn't really finished?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be positive, you know, because it really is stressful. It's super stressful.
No, it's going to be fun. It'll be fun.
But I am excited about it. But I can't approach it like I normally do because even now, I mean, last night in rehearsal, there's this one part that I don't think culturally we can use in the production. Mm-hmm. So I put it to the cast. I was like, you guys got to help me because I don't feel like we can do this. We need something else to replace it. And I would never do that in an established, published play.
Yeah.
Because the words are there for a reason, and we have to figure out why they're there. Well, that isn't where we're at with this. Mm-hmm. So, I hope that it all...
I feel like you're always challenging yourself. Like, even Romeo and Juliet, for people who don't know, like, you did a Samoan... Like, I don't know.
It's kind of a mashup. Like a
mashup, yeah.
Yeah, because we had some translated and some not.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy. Samoan and Old English. Like, that's... Who thinks of that? But you did it.
And it worked.
It worked really well.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're saying it's a tried and true story, but you still, like, found a lot of room to change and develop a new type of story.
And yet I didn't really change that much.
Right.
Really. I actually... didn't. I mean, I put a palm tree on stage. Is that like, we built a folly. We put people in lava lavas. Yeah. I mean, it, why Shakespeare is so important. And I think, well, I know will always be important and we will always do as long as I'm here, is because the stories represent every culture. Yes, they were written by, you know, a British guy, but, I mean, I've seen productions where people are wearing, like Julius Caesar, and they're wearing Iraqi war gear as if they're soldiers in the war, and you can see, oh my goodness, it's happening now. That story is really a reflection of this moment in time.
Yeah.
And the islands, you know, what I'm learning and what I've learned from being here so far is so rich and so full of stories, and yet they don't have theater in the same way that, I don't know, very Eurocentric mindset has theater. And yet they tell their stories in other ways, but many of the cultures, they don't have their stories written down. They're danced or their oral traditions or things like that.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about this, I knew I wanted to incorporate our students in a way that they hadn't been before. So I knew I had to use a play that I could change. So I had to go with someone who was dead. And
Willie Shakes.
You know, for old Bill. And this play, to be honest with you, I feel like it was divine intervention, because I don't really even know how I decided, because this isn't necessarily one of my favorite plays.
Yeah.
But I experience on campus sometimes, and I experienced in my reading, that there's many of the islands, especially because of how welcoming they are. I mean, think about Hawaii, for instance. We're taken advantage of by colonization. And not just by American colonization, by German and Spanish and, you know, all kinds of colonization. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what could one of the stories be from that time period? Thinking, what if we had the Capulets? Because I knew that this was a side against a side.
Mm-hmm.
What if one family has kind of worked their way in to life on this particular island and is slowly kind of buying up things and becoming friends with these people and establishing themselves as a wealthy family and as a good trade companions. And, you know, what happens if you have a family like that that's not necessarily in there to take over, but maybe starts with good intentions, and yet somewhere along the line they've offended somebody? Mm-hmm. Because that's what we have with the Capulets and the Montagues, is that somehow they hate each other, but we don't know why or how. It was so long ago that nobody can remember. And also then you have this idea of forbidden love, right? That they hate each other, and not necessarily making it a race thing, even though that was part of what came across in our production, but just the fact that you have two enemies, and yet what heals the enemies is the love of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And the tragedy is that they end up dying for that to happen. But I was interested in the coming together portion.
Yeah.
That yes, tragedy can happen. I mean, tragedy has happened on this island and tragedy is happening all over. But how can we find a way to, in the end, come together? And I think that's why the story worked. Also something in my research, and I know that I'm not totally accurate, but in Samoan they have a formal and an informal way of speaking in their language. It's built in. So I thought, with Shakespeare we have this formality in the language, which is kind of hard to understand with our American English at the moment, sometimes for some people. But I thought it was a good thing to pair with it, because when it was translated, that it would lend itself to that text, because it has a formality to it. So I don't know. That's why I did that. But the house was full every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I tell my students all the time that it was kind of a once in a lifetime experience if you were in the audience, because, you know, I teach about in Shakespeare's time, there was all standing room in the Globe Theaters. They would just stand, and if there was a performance that was great, they would, you know, they'd be laughing, they'd be cheering. People came again and again because it was so cheap to go, and they would have the shows memorized, and so they would say lines along with the actors, and they would throw food if it was a bad performance and or if they didn't like somebody. And in this production, the audience, when they knew the songs, they were singing along. They were cheering, they were laughing, they were standing up. People brought babies and children, and even though it's not really a show for children. But it was
a community event. Like,
yeah.
I remember everybody was going.
Yeah. So it, in that way, as a piece of theater, I think it was a wild success for our campus and for our students. And now I have a student who's taking it back and going to produce it in Samoa, so.
Wow.
Cool. Which the play's never really been done, but they want her to come and do it. So things like that are exciting. That's theater so really cool. can change people's lives, and it's changing her life as she goes to do this. And I'm hoping that we'll be getting some more plays that are actually written in Samoa and performed there, or in other countries too. I just want it to spread.
The Ari Theater.
The Ari.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you have so many different types of plays. There's so much diversity within like what you're producing. How do you take what you learn from one show, you know, all those nuances and those things that just come to be because you have to, you're putting restrictions on yourself, like how to do things. Like, how do you apply one show and what you learn to the next show? That's so much different from
Sometimes I can't.
You just...
I mean, the technique is different. Like when I did Urashi Mataro this fall, I mean, it's a children's theater play. So, and children are super smart. So you can't fake them out. You gotta, it's gotta be real and it's gotta be full of life, and you can't play down to them. You have to play up to them. And I incorporated some very adult technique into that production, and it really worked for them. They understood it. And the techniques they were using were Japanese techniques, so I can't use those in this production. So I have no idea. Sometimes it's just, I learned how to communicate better with actors. Like I can do this better.
Yeah.
And I can apply that next time. But in terms of how I approach each show, man, it's super different. I mean, if I was doing Shakespeare, I'd always start with foundational, how we speak this, what the words mean, how you figure out what the words mean if you don't know, stuff like that. But I wish it was that easy. I wish I could actually carry stuff over. But then that's kind of part of the challenge, right?
Yeah.
Is that it doesn't.
How do you start getting into directing? It seems like such a crazy task. I guess it makes sense that you started as an actor.
Yeah, I started as an actor. But some people, I went to school with people who got an MFA in just directing.
So you can just get a degree and then continue. You get a degree and then you continue on.
I mean, they're all over the place directing all kinds of different things. I mean,
you just do it.
You just
gotta go to school.
Well, and often you work kind of from the ground up.
Yeah.
In big regional theaters, you work as an assistant director, stage manager. I have a friend who's a director, but he works as a stage manager a lot, and that's how he was able to get into directing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tricky. But you gotta have technique.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can't. Or you're just kind of like painting blind. Like you that's what is the foundation of, you know, any art form is technique. It's really hard to paint a masterpiece if you don't understand color or something.
Yeah.
Or something.
Something like that.
So foundational.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I don't.
Have you written anything personally? Like
I have.
Play written? Okay.
I have written plays.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned in our playwriting class how I wrote one play. And never expecting it to see the light of day. And then I received news that someone was producing it the next year. And I was like, no, not that play.
Was this the one with the heads?
To be seen. This is the picture frame one.
Oh, okay.
It was absurd. It was kind of an absurd play. I wrote it about, I wrote it really, a really long time ago. So when the whole war in Iraq started, I had lots of friends who, right out of high school, joined the National Guard so they could pay for college, and who were the first people they called up to go over the National Guard. I had one friend who had a very serious wound from being shot. I have a lot of friends who are coming home wounded and hurt, and thank goodness none had died. But I was really angry that they joined to go to school, which is not a good reason to join the military. I just like to say that. But, you know, and then they did their duty and they served, and just how hard it was for them to be 18 years old with wounds that make their ability to work for the rest of their life diminished. And so this was just, it was a story about some of those people that I wrote. And it, it was more of kind of a cathartic thing. It really, really shouldn't have been produced. I didn't go see it, so.
Yeah.
Woo! Hopefully it's been produced since, so that's probably good.
You never know.
Could be the next one we do.
Exciting.
At BYU.
No.
Sister Densley.
No, I'm not doing it. But, and I've written other things. I've written monologues, and I've written other plays. And we have faculty on campus who have written plays that you wouldn't necessarily think. Like our vice president, John Bell. He's a published playwright.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What did he graduate in?
Biology.
Biology.
Just
you never know.
Play.
You never
know.
He
loves the theater, and so does his brother. I think I'm totally like trying to be factual here, but some of it's not.
It's
but
your
I know
say.
He's worked with his brother, and I don't know if they co-wrote or if they just worked together to produce something. But
that's so cool.
He's written plays, and he's working on one right now, actually. So
next one.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You never know. I think it's really important to, no matter what your degree is to have whatever your art is and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, I mean, he's a biologist, he's a scientist, but this is his art. And so when you make sure that you service that part of your life, whatever it is, it makes you successful in the other parts. If you deny it, it's that balance thing we're always striving for. You won't be balanced.
Yeah. Yin yang.
Mm-hmm. Theater and everything else.
They fit together.
They fit perfectly together.
Perfect.
In a wheel of black and white.
Do you have any advice for young writers, young actors?
Yeah. Just do
take her playwriting class, obviously.
Playwriting class. No, I am excited about the playwriting class because we're going to produce the plays that are written in it.
That's
so our students get to see on stage, you know, if they submit them for the committee to be approved. I mean, they have to decide if they want their play to be produced. I'm not going to do the thing that happened to me where they just produce it anyway. they'll get to see them. I mean, they're not, like I said, they're not meant to be read. They're meant to be seen. And then there'll be produced playwrights at the end that they can have on their resume. Wow. They can keep writing and... Yeah, I'm super excited about that.
That's a really cool class. I'm in it.
Yeah, just you are in it.
Yeah,
you're writing good stuff.
Thanks.
But
it's
back
different,
to this, like the
sure.
change of like using technology. That's why it's important to write your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Like before, like I mentioned, you weren't supposed to write your own stuff. You know, you got to use somebody else's stuff.
Yeah.
But now you want something good, you just write your own.
Yeah, it's like I don't like that. I'll change it in mine.
Yeah.
But
because we all have stuff to say.
And it's interesting, like what you said in class, you said, like, you're kind of writing like a screenwriter. A lot of us were.
Yeah.
And it's like struggling with like getting the Netflix out of our head and how it looks on Netflix and like going to be on stage. So it was interesting
really
to hear you.
I actually think we need to probably watch some more plays in that class because it's hard. We don't, here we just don't have access. I would love for every class I teach to get to see two plays a semester.
Yeah.
But you just can't. I don't think that we should deny the film side of our brains. I mean, that's what's happening. So how can we incorporate that into what we're doing rather than pretending it's not happening?
Yeah. Awesome class. Take the class if you're listening.
I like movies too, you know. But I also like plays. They're just different.
They're just different. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it for different reasons.
Me too.
So.
And the film, I mean, you see exactly every frame that the editor wants you to see.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I find myself sometimes when I watch a movie wondering what's happening over here. What's happening off?
Mm-hmm.
Are they all looking at the camera knowing that they're not on screen? Or are they... Like, I'm just more fascinated by that. And that's one reason why theater's cool, because you get to choose where you look. It's like your own story.
Yeah, and you can hear, like, wavering of voices, like, in the imperfections, you know. Oh, the editor would be like, do it again, or the director would say...
Let's bring them back in. Let's re-record that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no re-recording.
Yeah, you can go to one show, like, one night, and then go to the next show the next night, and it'll be different.
Be the same.
So, it's interesting.
Yeah. I just think it's important. I think that art is important, and I would hope that my students... especially students that are struggling with getting, you know, Netflix out of their head, for example. I would say, like, when's the last time you went to an art gallery?
Yeah.
Go look at a painting. Go listen to a symphony. Find something else that inspires you, because all art talks to each other, and you never know what's gonna work with your brain. We just need more of it in our lives. And seems like the powers that be seem to try to strip it away from our lives. And it's hard. I mean, my kids, they're super little, and they don't understand a lot, but every night they beg to come to rehearsal. And I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I've actually wondered why. I'm like, why? You could be sleeping. You could be.
I crave sleep.
I do crave sleep. Yeah. You could be sleeping.
You could be sleeping.
They're like, but Mom, I'll miss something. Aww. And they're just, I mean, they're obsessed with the imperfection of it. And I think that at some point we lose that.
Yeah.
That excitement. And one of my favorite stories actually comes from Dr. Glenn, who's in our production. When I did Tato in the fall, her son got to see it because he's a kindergartner at La Elementary. And he got to see the production with school. And then his mom brought him again another night. And then she sent me a video of him having a meltdown the last night because she wasn't planning on taking him. He'd seen it twice because he'd never get to see it again. Oh. And I thought, how astute is that? Like the knowing that it will disappear forever. And he was so upset that he would never get to see it again.
Did she take him?
No, she didn't. Like it was too late at that point.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Lessons. You know? Learn them
now
young.
She knows.
Yeah, no.
But it talks to our kids, and yet we're trying to,
like
take away that and physical education, and
they're trying to take away PE.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I mean, not that I'm super good at PE, but
PE is the greatest.
Okay, totally different experiences, but I still think it's important.
I just didn't like to run a mile.
Play dodgeball.
I just walked the field. That was our
jump rope.
Yeah,
all that stuff.
You had a really great PE teacher.
Yeah, I was like, I just walked the field because I didn't want to play, but it was great chatting time. But anyway,
but still, we're just missing balance in our lives. And that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So bring your kids to the theater. Bring yourself to the theater. Or to an art group. I'll just plug any art. You can go anywhere. Yeah. You don't have to come to any see art. My kind of art.
Solana, though. Coming up next Wednesday.
Yeah.
I guess by the time we air this podcast, it will have already
happened.
No, let's release this one before. All March 15th is when it happens.
March 15th.
Right. We're opening it night.
Up. Yeah, opening night.
Okay, we'll try to get this by at least March 14th.
Well, you can always try. Yeah. We're actually running longer than any production that has run here before. And I told the cast, I said, look, if any of you want to ever do this, you need to learn how to do it longer than 3 days. Yeah. I mean, in the professional theater, you do 8 shows a week. That's a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And you have to be used to carrying something over an extended period of time. So even though we're doing it weird, we're doing a Thursday, Friday, 2 shows on Saturday, first week. Then we're doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday the next week because I don't want to do anything that interferes with culture night.
Yeah.
Then it's, it's a weird schedule. And yet, I don't know, our students get to do their 7, not 8 shows, but they get to do 7 shows. Yeah. I hope it'll be a little bit more worth for them that they'll feel the value of all their hard work for this experience.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that we haven't asked you that you want to talk about or you want to?
Into the ether. You could say anything right now. Doesn't even have to be about theater with an Ari.
No. I don't know. Sometimes I wish people would just bring me food. Like I could just sit. People would bring me food. I love it. So I have one student, well, you know this, who works at Pounders.
Yes.
And every day before playwriting, she's always hungry because she's just finished a shift. So she always gets to bring over like leftovers or the pizza that went bad. Not bad, but like,
A little bit burnt.
I didn't want arugula. Let me take this with me then. And or the cookie that a corner broke. Even though every time she brings it to me, it's a perfect round. But she tells me that they're only allowed to take them if they're broken.
She just
loves
them.
You.
But I'm just saying that there's something really special about sharing food with other people.
Yes.
And bringing food for people.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
I think.
Yeah. Bought Cheez-Its for the class yesterday.
Oh, yeah, so nice of you.
I appreciated it.
Well, because I was also eating Spam and stuff in front of them, so I didn't want to be that guy, It was like balance. Like, this is for everybody. This is for me.
I ate Cheez-Its before I came here today.
They're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a very good sharer. Like, I'll get you something and me something, but I'm like, this is mine, though. this is mine.
Ari, who's our customer, our costume designer, she's just fabulous. She works full-time on campus and then comes in every night to sew our costumes.
I haven't met her.
Oh, she's just lovely. She works in the Center for Learning and Teaching. She's their administrative assistant. She's pretty amazing. But sometimes she brings me treats. Like the other day, she had brie. Like, oh. I love brie and crackers. It's okay. I see really? The look on your face.
I was brie.
Brie. It's a cheese. It's a okay. soft cheese.
Oh, yeah. It was something.
So, sorry. I'm so sorry.
I was like, what is brie?
It was brie, which is a soft cheese. It's really yummy.
It's kind of cheddar. It's with.
Crackers, and she had stuff. Wow. Oh, gosh. I was just in heaven. Random well, sushi.
It's just a little bit too just fancy saying. For me. It's like, I'll learn eventually when I'm yeah. more cultured.
You're a lawyer.
I'll learn about brie. Mm.
Yeah.
Brie cheese.
Yeah.
Easy cheese.
I was all about... Jeez, I studied in England for a while, studied theater, and it was all about the cheese. Super cheesy. Yeah. the school that I went to, you know the hall in Harry Potter?
Yes.
The banquet hall?
Yes.
So that's where we ate breakfast and lunch and dinner every day.
Stop
that's so
it.
Cool.
That is my yeah. dream. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, and it was also cool, too, because the college I went to... Mm-hmm. They has it when you walk in the door. So the door is like 2 feet tall because everyone was really short in medieval times.
Yeah.
So you have to squat down to like get through the door and it opens up to this courtyard. And the courtyard, every college is independent and yet all mm-hmm. together, if that makes sense. So it's walled off. So you have to enter and then you mm-hmm. can't leave unless you go back out through that door. And right ahead is a chapel. Every college also has a chapel in it. And there's a big oval perfectly manicured green lawn.
Wow.
And it has a rope around it. And the first day I was like, why is there a rope around this? It's because the woman who was the wife of the guy who founded the college, mm-hmm. he died and she buried his heart underneath the front lawn. So you're not
How
allowed to
dramatic.
Walk on it. I know, it's super dramatic. And I knew this was the place for me, even though I'm not dramatic, like I enjoy
yeah.
weird things like that.
Did you touch the grass?
I did, like, totally did.
Okay.
I stepped
right
on it with
through.
I didn't run through it. Because I felt like I could get cursed, and I really
right.
needed that to work sense. Hard that summer.
You just put yeah. your finger on it, you're like,
yeah.
oh, yes.
It's like I'm in a circle.
It's just crazy. And yeah, so no one, it's like this beautiful lawn, and nobody sits on it to pick my
How do they
anything.
Mow the lawn?
Yeah.
Somebody walks on it. I never saw anyone walking on it.
They just do it at like 3 a.m. with, like, by hand something. With shears just, so that you can't like yeah. hear the mower.
Or the grass just never grows.
Yeah, it's cursed. Something.
The heart is just has
super
a
cursed.
Circle.
Okay, so tell me about Harry Potter school.
Oh, well, it wasn't the Harry Potter. Okay, so I right down Christchurch, which is where they filmed a lot of Harry, like the stairs that go to the banquet hall and stuff was
yeah.
all filmed at Christchurch.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like 2 blocks away from where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
But the hall that they eat food in was. Crafted after the hall
oh, wow.
in the school that we were at.
Oh, fun.
And one thing that's pretty awesome about any school, at least the school I went to mm-hmm. in England, is that you have breakfast, lunch, and dinner together
that's
as
really
the entire
fun.
School. So it's served between this time and this time, kind of like here.
Yeah.
But it's not informal. Like, you don't just go with your tray.
Whatever.
And yeah. you go through, like, all the silverware is real and all the plates are real. And you
Fancy.
Sit down, and sometimes for breakfast there's, like, a buffet line, so you get your stuff and you go and you sit. And there's also the, you know, the head table where everyone sat in Harry Potter?
Dumbledore.
So they have they have that
yeah.
across the front. So
Stop.
Then the teachers or the professors sit at that table when they eat. And
You're
but
living my dream.
It was super fun. And also, in England, they have a lot of mystery meat. Like, you get food,
really?
But nobody really knows what it is. It was always delicious, but it was weird. It was weird, too. There's, like,
yeah.
a lot of lamb, but you're not sure if it's lamb.
Interesting.
I've heard that British food is nothing, like, special, you know? Like, it's
it
just kind of...
But, you know, I also heard it was going to be gross, and when
yeah.
I was there, it wasn't gross.
It just was...
It was just different.
Plain. I don't know.
Yeah. Just, yeah. you know, your normal fare. I don't know.
You're living
But it was
my
cool
dream.
That
it's
you
fine.
Actually go and you sit and you eat together. I thought that
yeah.
that was really special, because we don't do that a lot. Anymore. And if you miss breakfast, you know, well, sucks to be you. And there's
yeah.
no cereal at breakfast.
It's like all food.
It's
food.
Eggs. And they take these tomatoes and they have them and they roast them. So they're super, like, sweet, and they sprinkle the stuff on top. So you have, like, you get your eggs and the toast is all standing up on these little toast stands. And
exactly
you grab
like
toast,
Harry Potter.
Just like Harry Potter. It's just like it. And then big sausages. And their
That's
bacon
so
is not what we... So British bacon is not the bacon we have. It's basically like Canadian bacon.
Oh.
I'm like, where are the long, skinny, crispy strips? They don't have that.
It's just
the like,
circles.
It's just like Canadian bacon. No, it's...
Or
but it's not long
different.
And thin. It's like a slab. But it's thin. Mm. I don't know. It's just not the
it's
same.
Different.
It doesn't taste the same.
Yeah.
The Brits.
Guys,
weird people.
They have some things right.
Yeah.
Some things, not so much.
Magical experience.
It was
I bet
a magical
it was.
Experience.
I have tears in my eyes. I'm so jealous.
Well, it wasn't like at
But
Christ
still,
Church is a church.
Like, just like
wasn't there
living kind of the life. Oh my gosh!
But there were some things, and this is right when Harry Potter, because I went a long time ago. This is mm-hmm. when Harry Potter was just kind of starting to become a real thing, mm-hmm. and along the road that I lived, everybody they go to pubs every day, and it's rather than. This is probably something really appropriate for BYU. I don't drink, but they mm-hmm. have they keep all of their barrels underground and they use pressure to pipe them up, so they don't actually like refrigerate them, because that's how they've been doing it for centuries. Is they just mm-hmm. keep it cool by having it underground. And everyone at the end of class, I mean, there's a pub in your school where people go, and again, a really tiny door, so you can't get into it very well. But it's just part of their culture. That's how they sort of unwind. But what I would do to unwind is they there was a bookshop across the street and then one that was just right around the corner from where I lived. And it was one of those ones almost like Harry Potter in that all the books were on the shelf and then they'd have stacks of books on the bottom and stacks of book on because there were so many books, there wasn't enough space.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, people were always that building was full because people love books.
Reading and books there.
And here you go into like Barnes & Noble and there's like four people and some of them are always weird.
They're old.
You know, and it's just different. It was so, and it's made of stone. You know, the facade is stone. The walls are stone.
I need
and
to go
people
there.
Just have a respect for books in a different way, which is something that I really cherish because I grew up mm-hmm. reading and, well, I mean, I hope I did. But I read a lot. I love to read. And that's another reason why I love plays is because it's like a something hidden inside of a book. It's different than just a regular story. But anyway, it's pretty pretty awesome.
Man, so jealous.
One day we'll podcast about Oxford and we'll talk about
just
that.
Just England. Yeah. Why not?
All right, well, Solana.
Solana. Oh, yeah, sorry, Solana. You said to talk about whatever.
No, I was
so
just talking
about food.
We
and
again.
We got to Harry Potter.
I was just wrapping it up. I was just, I mean, anything
Solana
else?
Is great.
Solana.
Go see it.
It's coming to BYU March 15th. That might be tomorrow.
It's not.
I'm just saying for, like,
oh,
when
wait,
this
you
is.
Actually get this.
Yes.
Yeah, right now it's
go
March 5th.
Run 6th. And see it.
Yeah, run.
Yeah,
tell
run.
Your family, friends.
No, truly, it will be an experience that you'll never forget.
And you'll get to see me sing.
And we get to see you sing.
Do you want to, like, give them a sample of that real fast?
Oh, no, absolutely not. You got to come see.
You're right.
I'll be in full costume. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's, and, you know, this show, the people who've written it, I mean, they work on Broadway currently. Mm-hmm. And that's where this show is headed. And so someday, when this story is all flushed out, our students will be able to say, I sang in that first realized production. And the audience who comes to see it will be able to say, I saw the first time that was realized. And be excited about what's changed about it, you know, since things are evolving. But I really hope that people come. And we made the ticket prices super cheap so that people can come. I mean, $3 for students.
It's really cheap.
It's so much cheaper than a movie. You can see it three times for the cost of one movie ticket.
That's true.
And faculty and staff, missionaries, we got to give them a shout out. You know, they got to have some some help. $5 in general admission, $8. Yep. But still, it's everything's cheaper than a movie
Very
ticket.
Very affordable.
Yeah.
So I would hope that you would invest in your brains. And your souls.
Just go see it.
Just go see it, please. It's going to be wonderful. Yeah. Please see it.
Jackson's going to be so glorious on stage.
He is. He's doing
so
a
excited.
Wonderful job.
Okay. I messed up pretty bad last night, actually. But our whole group did, so it's fine.
You covered it up.
Weird situation with the monitors and
laptop. Not your fault.
Oh, my gosh. Nobody could hear anything. So the piano... Yeah. Things are going to be moved. This is just one of the things we're trying to work through. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're having a band on stage. So it's how do we have a band?
So cool.
And right, but right now they're down in front. But if you're backstage, you can't hear anything that's happening in the front. If that makes sense. Because there's a wall in between you and the sound.
Right.
And so people just came in singing whatever note they wanted to sing. Wasn't really what was written. But we fixed it. We'll see what happens.
That's funny.
Tomorrow when we run it again.
Yeah.
It was not your fault, Jackson.
Today. I'm actually also in the set shop class for the...
Yeah, which is what we're about. You're painting today.
I'm going to paint, and I think we're going to pick up the piano and take it on the stage, but we'll see.
Wow, pick it up?
Oh, I think you're going to
roll it?
Roll it around.
No, I know, but like, you know.
Yeah, it still has got to
move
it.
Move the piano.
When you said pick
guys.
Up, I was like, what kind of piano
not like
is it?
Like bicep curl the piano.
Like, he was trying to make Jackson. It sound like really impressive.
Yeah, we're just going to pick up the piano.
But I don't even
it's
know
probably just
going to
be me, too.
I'm
like the only guy in there, so just move that piano.
He's not
alone. a pulley system. Yeah. That'd be fun.
I hope it's cool for the students, too, to be able to sit back and go, like, I built this with my bare hands.
And power tools.
And power tools.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Yeah. It's, like, therapeutic. We destroy a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's also a fun class. Plug it. You know?
It is. Hey, guys. Take a Theater 260R. You can build our sets. When we first got here, we had one person in the class. And now we have so many that we had to put a cap on it so that... Because there's not enough room for people in the like, there's not enough standing room in the shop for too many people. It becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
So.
I've had some close calls.
It's awesome. Yeah. That's and next, so cool. It's also just cool life skills, too, because next, it's Dana. Next semester, or maybe this semester, we'll see what happens. I think next semester, we're building, like, actual furniture, like chairs and tables and things like that for us to use That's in class awesome. So that we can actually have prop furniture. But it's cool to walk out of a class and be like, I know how to build a table and it will stay up and be safe.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. I don't know. That kind of stuff makes me excited. But I'm
woodworking.
Yeah, right now I'm working on it because I'm all right with metal, but my only experience with wood besides this class was the carpentry merit badge, and
what?
I had to build a bench and it was awful. They're like, this does not count.
No badge.
Do
for
it
you.
Again. Yeah.
Yeah, I took a woodworking class and my teacher built my box for me because he just realized, like, beginning of the semester, he's like, I'm just gonna have to help you through it. So only
That's
time
sweet.
I still have it. I'm really proud
Aww.
Of it.
Even though you didn't do it?
Yeah, he was super scary too. Friendship. So he'd be like, oh, just give me this board and I'll just slide
like,
over here. And...
He's covering his bases.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to be liable
like,
for your
Jeez.
Well, that's sad. He just didn't let you kind of figure it out.
I didn't
even.
Want to.
Oh, you didn't want to.
Yeah, it's like,
okay,
take
fair
it.
Fair enough. So it was a good relationship.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. He was terrifying.
I know that, especially the women that take this class, like a lot of women, even now, are told, oh, no, you know, we'll do that. And someone else will take the job away from them.
Yeah.
In this class, it's like, no, this is a saw, and you're going to cut this board. Mm-hmm. And people are like giggling and cutting the saw. And then they're so empowered, you know? It's like, I just used a saw, you know? I mean, they're doing it safely
that
with eye protection and
right.
getting
they're
their
not,
fingers out of the way and all that jazz. But
they're not too excited.
No.
Safety first.
But, you know, in high-powered drills and things, it's super empowering.
Yeah.
If you want to be empowered, take shop class.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll retake it. Maybe I'll build my own box.
Yeah, we'll
just
see.
In the downtime, we'll you're just like, what are you doing, Carly? Just making a box.
Making a box.
By myself this time.
By myself. To hold all my things in it. Anyway. Well, thanks for coming and talking
yeah, thanks,
with
guys.
Us. And
I hope that people, you know, if they choose to listen to this, that it affects their sensibilities about theater a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's what we're all about, change and stories.
Change. We're all about change.
All about change. Change it up.
All righty. Anyway. Well, Solana, March 15th is when it starts.
That's right. I'm going to go paint sets now.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in. This was the Zeno Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Zeno Podcast.
That's X-E-N-O Podcast. If you have any questions or comments about what we talked about today, or suggestions for future episodes, you can email us at podcastzeno@gmail.com.
This podcast was brought to you by BYU Hawaii's Reading and Writing Center. Thanks for learning by listening.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.